And welcome again to Brew Crew Online. I'm Benjamin Orr.
I'm Colin Bennett.
And unlike last week, where we were a little bit more positive, the Brewers are now slipping away their lead, well, not really the lead, but, you know, kind of where they were the wild card. They're now 4.5 back. Last night's loss to the Reds, 4-2, really didn't help. Johnny Cueto looked good for the Reds, got his 19th win of the season. Mike Fiers looked bad for the Brewers, didn't even make it out of the fifth. Bullpen looked solid, didn't allow a hit through the 3 2/3 innings they pitched. Didn't walk a batter. But, you know, that's kind of an effort that we kind of needed a little earlier in the year. But this Brewer, you know, run for the playoffs is really in jeopardy right now.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to try to continue to stay positive because this end of the season has been so fun. But when you run up against... You run up against teams like the Nationals, which we were lucky to get a split out of, and then the Reds, who, you know, you thought would be relaxed, but there's still obviously reason to fear these teams. I mean, Johnny Cueto has been phenomenal all season. We have Bronson Arroyo coming up tonight. I mean, it's just a gauntlet the Brewers have to run through. And, you know, they needed a lot of help, and we're just not getting it the same way we were, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, it's just when you have guys who go 0-for-4, they need to, you know, actually get hits. You know, Corey Hart 0-for-3, Lucroy 0-for-3, Aoki 0-for-4. It really hurts. And then, you know, for the Reds, they did, you know, pretty decent. You know, Joey Votto doubled to right. Bruce got a double. And they were just hitting all around. Todd Frazier was the only one who didn't have a hit besides Johnny Cueto. But, you know, they brought in Broxton in the 8th and then Chapman in the 9th. I don't know if he did a somersault again or not, but I think he's learned from not doing that. He got his 36th save of the season, which I think is actually rather impressive considering he wasn't even the starter, the starting closer going into opening day. So I guess my hat's off to him for a little bit, but, you know, it's tough because I know we a lot of us wanted to think that the Brewers can't get in the playoffs, but we had to be realistic about it and go through the teams that the Brewers have to get through to go there. And I think I'm more or less happy if they just finish the season above 500 at this point, because it's been a tough stretch. Like you said, that two games, you know, the four game series we had against the Nationals, we took it 2-2, and then now we're playing the Reds. Tonight's matchup is Markham versus Bronson Arroyo. And, you know, Markham's had his struggles lately. Arroyo's had his struggles lately. So maybe it's going to be a bit of a slugfest for both teams. But if the Brewers want to win, they have to win tonight and probably the rest of their games against Houston and San Diego.
Right. They legitimately have to win out to have a chance because the Cardinals aren't losing anytime soon. At least it doesn't appear that way. And everything else is pretty much locked up. No one's really changing positions, you know? So it's really up to the Brewers to win every single game to even have a chance, and even then it doesn't secure them a playoff spot. You know, they got really close, and that was great. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun to watch, and the season's not over yet. There's still good baseball left to play. I just don't think it's going to be playoff baseball this season.
Unfortunately, I have to agree with you. I just think the Brewers, they're giving it all they have, but that's just not enough right now because past mistakes killed them, really did. We've talked about that before, and I don't want to talk about it again. Because it's just, you look at that, you look at the 2-3 games we could have won and where the situation we'd be in now. And the Brewers knew that. They played smarter ball coming in, you know, in even the August they started playing smarter ball. Became really apparent in September when you finally started hearing their names mentioned, you know, that, oh, they can, you know, make a playoff run, but the magic might be gone right now. Who knows? Regardless, I'm just really glad Milwaukee was able to turn it around, though. I didn't want to see them end the season the way they started it.
Right. No, and just, you know, I was thinking about Mike Fiers yesterday while I was watching the game, and we were still having discussion. I was having discussion with a friend of, you know, should Mike Fiers still get consideration for, you know, some Rookie of the Year talk? And, you know, looking at his last couple starts, well, take everything that happened after that Colorado Rockies start where he just got hammered in two innings. And you see, he only has two starts after that that went over six innings, and one of them was only 6 2/3.
That and the fact that he had only two outings after that, he only gave up one run. The most were over three or more.
Right. It's, there's something about, you know, rookie pitchers, I think, Wade Miley being one of the exceptions, Billingsley also, you know, these kind of, you where we were talking about it the week before, you really have to be phenomenal in order to get these, in order to get these kind of considerations. And something happened to Fiers after that Colorado start where he looked just, he's looked downright human after that, hasn't he?
Yeah, and it's incredible because before that he had, I think that was the perfect game attempt against Cincinnati, where he went eight innings, gave up one run on three hits, struck out seven. And yep. after that, he's like a completely different guy. It's seriously a case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with him because he looks like such a good pitcher. He looks so comfortable in that role, and then bam, that Rocky series hits, and he just falls apart. You know, we don't really know what it is with pitchers, why this happens. A lot of us can speculate that, yeah, maybe it's a mental thing. But it just, I don't know with Fiers. It's just been really bad. You know, in the last, in the month of September, he has an ERA of 6.97.
Right.
1-3. It's just awful. His whip is over 2. He's allowed 16 earned runs and 20.2 innings pitched, 31 hits, walk 12. He's really laboring to get through these innings anymore. Back in, say, even like mid-July, if he would have gone 5 innings, give up 4 runs, Renicky would have pulled him. Now he's letting him go longer if he gives up more runs. You know, I think he's kind of building confidence with Fiers to where Fiers needs to get out of these innings on his own instead of relying on the bullpen. But I don't know. I don't think he has any potential for being in the Rookie of the Year talk. I think if he had rebounded nicely after the Colorado game, then yeah, but he hasn't at all.
Right. He's really been struggling since. And I think you touched on something there that's important. With Renicky leaving him in longer to kind of get out of these jams on his own, as you said, as much as that's frustrating for a fan to kind of watch that, I think that's very important for Fiers himself. And I think it bodes well for him in terms of the confidence the club has in him. He's struggling, but after the Colorado series, he also didn't, you know, it wasn't like he got shellacked quite the same way. There's four run starts after that, but that's not wholly uncommon, especially if you're going, you know, 5 or 6 innings like he was in a few of them. But I think that's an important thing for him to be able to deal with those struggles and see how he can. He's not completely ineffective. I mean, last night in Cincinnati, he did strike out 8 and only walk 2. So it's going to be interesting to see. Where do you think he sits next year in this rotation?
You know, I had him pretty high up. I had him maybe a 2, maybe a 3. But it really depends on who's in this rotation, I believe. You know, Markham is not going to be there. You know, you and I both agree on that.
Right.
We have to look at who's going to be there. Gallardo's going to be in there. Estrada's going to be in there. Fiers is going to be in there. Probably Narvison, maybe Thornburg, Rogers. It really depends. As it sits now, I probably would have him as a 3 or 4, depending on where you want to place Narvison, if you place him in the rotation. Because I think you kind of have to step up Narvison to a 3 or 4 as well. Because I don't think you have Thornburg or Rogers certainly be a 3 or 4. They don't have experience like Fiers and Narvison have actually had. I don't know if this really changes a lot about Flyers. And it's kind of a question of there's pre-Colorado and post-Colorado. And it's literally two different pitchers. Which one's the real Mike Fiers? That's the question we're going to have to deal with. I don't really believe either one is. I think it's a mix right now. But I think if he can certainly straighten it out, he's going to be deadly. And I think, you know, he is a strikeout pitcher. He does strike out quite a lot of batters in the game, usually around five or more. He actually had a 10 strikeout game against the Pirates back in late August, and a game he won. So I have to say three or four probably.
Yeah, I would see him fitting well as a three or four. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, and maybe I'm just not seeing it, but I mean, I'm not really sold on Mark Rogers going forward.
You know, I kind of have to agree with you there. I never really was either. I thought he was just a really good fill-in guy, but nothing long-term, certainly.
Yeah, the way I see Mark Rogers, I think going forward is the way a lot of people saw Estrada. You know, a guy that can eat up a couple innings as a bullpen guy, and spot start if we need him. I don't really see the depth of experience that I'd like to, I guess. I mean, he's had 7 starts in Milwaukee this year, with 3-1 and a 3.92 ERA. He's done well. He's done very well, you know, in terms of strikeouts, keeping his walks down, all that. I don't know. I just don't get the right feeling from him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, you're not crazy there, because I thought the same thing. You know, and I thought the same thing with Estrada, too. I'm thinking, well, why are we starting him? You know, we need him in the bullpen to hold that down. And he made me eat my words. Rogers, I don't know if he can do the same thing. And it's not that I don't have confidence in Rogers. I certainly do. But we also have to look at how depleted this bullpen's going to be, because you know some of these guys aren't going to be here next year. I mean, let's face it. And if they are, then the front office is crazy.
Right.
And in that regards, I think you have to put Rogers in the bullpen, because I like Thornburg as a starter. I like Estrada as a starter. I like Fiers as a starter. So there's that fifth man, which I think goes to Narvison at this point. Because I know coming off of it, you know, season-ending injury isn't the most pleasing and appealing thing to being a starting pitcher, but he's still a starting pitcher at the end of the day. He had 3 really rough years, an ERA around 4.40. But I don't know. I mean, if you don't think Narvison's your guy, then maybe you go with Rogers. Maybe you go with Peralta. I don't know. I have to agree with you. I just was never really sold on Mark Rogers all that much as a starter. A spot starter, sure, but long time, I just don't know how he's going to handle it. He might blow up like Fiers, if not worse.
Right, and he did have a suspension, did he not?
I'm not really too sure. Was it this season?
I think it was either this season or last season.
I don't remember hearing his name with a suspension. Was it because of... I don't really remember that.
Yes, he had, his 2011 season, was, I'm reading this, directly from MLB.com, he worked only 44 1/3 innings in 2011 in a season cut short by wrist injury, as well as a suspension that stemmed from a tainted supplement.
Oh, boy.
Right. No,
I don't know which concerns me more about that, the tainted supplement, or the injured wrist.
I mean, it's definitely a nice 1-2 punch, and that kind of, I don't want to say that that's indicative of the type of person that he is. I just don't know, obviously don't know him personally at all, and don't know him very well as a baseball player, but those types of things lend a lack of confidence to fans, I think. I think he's a very good pitcher. I think putting him into the rotation as one of the five starters next year, I'd like to see how he does in spring training and see how he can stay healthy before we commit to him in the rotation.
I think it's also funny, he got, you know, heavily shellacked by Colorado as well in that same series that Fires did. Give up 5 runs in 6 innings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is about Colorado and our rookie pitchers, but
they don't know the park yet.
Yeah, that could very well be it. But then again, that's with anybody who's never pitched in Colorado, though. Just not rookies.
Yeah.
That mile-high city.
And Mark Rogers gives up... he gives up a fair amount of air outs as well, or fly balls as well. And it's... You know, for a fly ball pitcher, you try to use... you try to direct the ball as best you can to the biggest parts of the park. But that doesn't quite work in the thin air in Colorado.
Yeah. The one thing that really does concern me about Rogers as a starter is four of his outings, he didn't even make it into the sixth inning, and he was at 90 pitches or more.
Right.
So that kind of concerns me about his stamina and durability as a starter. Looking at his innings where he went 5 1/3, pitched, he had 107 pitches. That
right.
really concerns me if you want to make him a starter.
Yeah, and moving on a little bit in the pitching rotation, just to Sean Markham, who we all assume will soon be departed.
Yes.
hasn't won a game since June 8th. Obviously, he was injured for quite some time. But in the Brewers' run, half of the losses that they had going into, you know, going into this great run in the last 2 weeks, half of the losses that the Brewers had suffered came at the hands of a Sean Markham start, even though he only posted one of those losses on August 25th.
Yeah, in games pitched since Markham's been back that he started, and the Brewers have gone 3-3. He's lost one start himself, hasn't won anything, and it's been really bad. ERA of 6.10 in September, no decisions. Aside from his last start against the Nationals where he gave up 2 runs in 6 innings, he gave up 4 runs in his last 2 starts against Miami, St. Louis, and New York. This isn't what we expected out of Markham at all. We knew he would have an outing where he would give up maybe 5 runs and then maybe rebound with like 2 or 3, you know, 1 or 2 run starts. Maybe another 3 or 4 run start. And, you know, that's why his ERA was always hovered around and be 3.4, 3.5. But this is not the Markham we wanted. This is not the Markham we're paying for. And this is the Markham we're going to be getting rid of, because I just don't see him staying in Milwaukee after this. You have literally Mike Fiers and Willie Peralta, who are pitching better than him right now. Mike Fiers maybe not so much, but I think he's kind of in contention with Markham right now on the pitching wise. But you have Peralta who's pitching better than him. You have Thornburg who is pitching better than him. Gallardo obviously is pitching better than everybody else. I think for what he's worth, we just don't have the money for him. Seven and 0.25 million. I just don't think he's worth that.
Yeah, it's troubling because you almost feel like you were deceived a little watching Sean Markham this season compared to last season. I mean, there you have 13 wins. You have 13 wins in Toronto in 2010. You have 13 wins in Milwaukee in 2011, and then you have a 5-4 record over 19 starts in 2012, and you just kind of wonder where it went. You know, he had 158 strikeouts with Milwaukee in 2011. He has 100 this year. His average against has risen considerably from last season, but he's not walking any more batters. He's still the ground out pitcher we've seen before. I don't know what happened, you know?
I don't know. I don't really blame his injury on this, because he's been pitching for now a month since being injured. And the injury doesn't excuse, like you said, the 19 starts, only the 5 wins. I don't know. Markham really has shot himself in the foot a lot throughout this season. I don't know. He started off rough, and then once May and June hit, he did well, and then he got injured. And since coming back, he's just looked really bad. I think he's gone after the season. I think the Brewers try to go for somebody else possibly, but I just don't know who at this point.
Right.
I don't know. I kind of get concerned every time Markham's out. I really do. When I saw he was starting against Washington, I'm like, well, crap. You know, I really don't like him starting right now because I just don't think he has the stuff to start. And if the Brewers want to continue this, you know, serious playoff push, he can't be starting. It's plain and simple as that.
Yeah, he was a great pitcher for us last year, and he gave us some very, very good starts this year. It's difficult to watch someone like Markham go through what he's going through, where, you know, he's really had 2 seasons before the injury and after the injury, and you wonder about, you know, his delivery, if his delivery's changed after the injury, if something mechanical had gone wrong, you know, with his elbow, and just can't find it back. But it's a little too late now for him. You know, he had a few good auditions now, but the injuries, the inability to perform in big games, it's a little too much to keep him on. He almost becomes more of a liability than anything else going forward.
Yeah, and I don't really know what to expect of him tonight, honestly. You have Bronson Arroyo on the other end of that for Cincinnati, who he's looked rough heading into August, and then heading in from August into September, where we are right now, being at the end of September, he's pitched really well, posting a 2.33 ERA in September. He's 1-1. He's looking really strong for the Reds. I don't know. I just, with the way Marker's been pitching, with the way Arroyo's been pitching, the fact that it's in Cincinnati tonight, I think Arroyo, he gets the, obviously, the favorite here. Even though Milwaukee in this game, according to ESPN's favorited 52% to 48%, I just don't really see that. Markham will have one other start in the season. It'll be Monday, October 1st against the San Diego Padres at home. He'll probably go against Clayton Richard. I don't know. I just think these last two starts are Markham's last two starts in Milwaukee. I just don't see him going beyond this. I don't think you offer him anything more. And if you do, I think Doug Melvin's making a giant mistake there, because you could definitely use that money to try to get somebody else in Milwaukee.
Right. I think what these last two starts are for Markham are more... or more like resume starts, if you will. I mean, tonight's a big statement. It's a big chance for Milwaukee. If you believe that Milwaukee's not out of it, which my longtime devotion to the team forces me to say that Milwaukee's not out of it, Markham needs to pitch well tonight. He needs to pitch well at the end of the season. For Milwaukee, as much as for his own future job security. I mean, I think he's going to be picked up somewhere if he doesn't stay with Milwaukee. I think there are teams that can use a pitcher like him when he's on. He's not a bad pitcher. He's a guy you want, like, in the middle of your rotation. But he's just he just can't be the pitcher that we need from him anymore. And like you said, with Peralta, with Fiers, with Thornburg, you have Johnny Helweg, you have Ariel Pena, you have a ton of people coming up behind him that can hopefully perform just as well. So,
if not better.
Right, if not better, especially, you know, a few years down the road. Because remember, Markham is also 30.
You know, the
I think the jig's up for Markham as far as the Milwaukee Brewers are concerned.
You know, the one thing that really was kind of funny about Markham this season was a string of games he was pitching from May until June when he got injured. He was striking out like 9 people a game. He had a 9-game strikeout game. He had an 8-game strikeout, a 6-game strikeout, and we're like, this is Sean Markham. He does this.
Right.
We're not used to Sean Markham striking out that many people. We're thinking 3-4 if that. And he's striking out 9. Like, come on, this is not the Sean Markham we knew. And I'm not saying that was a bad thing. It's just really unexpected. So right. maybe if he gets into that kind of thing, you know, maybe the Rangers will be interested in him because, you know, they're always hurting for pitching. Maybe a team in the AL East will be after him, maybe Boston. You know, there's a lot of possibilities with Markham, and he is not a bad pitcher. He's just not a fit in Milwaukee. I just don't believe that. Because this is all inevitably a part of getting the Zach Greinke back, you know, part of that movement. That's all part of that. So, you know, because, you know, we're not crazy or anything. We just think we're going to have him back. So.
Right.
Just want a side note about that. How about he struck out 11 batters, I believe it was, in less than 5 innings last night against the Mariners. He ended up striking out 13, and just Greinke has started off really rough with the Angels, but has looked electric since then.
He has. And I mean, there wasn't any doubt that Greinke was going to get back to form. Like you said, that performance against the Mariners last night was just, I mean, it was incredible, and it was what, it's what you expect out of Greinke. You don't even need to expect it so much as you just know that type of performance is going to happen sooner or later. And his start with the Angels was strange because you just normally don't see, I don't want to say bad starts, but you don't see those kind of underwhelming starts from Zach Greinke put together very often. But I think it's safe to say that Greinke is back into form now, and the question about him becomes, you know, do the Angels make him an offer in the offseason? Does he take it, or does he try to go back somewhere where he's more comfortable?
You know, I heard something about the Angels possibly making some type of offer for him. I don't really know how much more money the Angels actually have, considering all the money they spent on Pujols and Wilson.
Right.
Because they didn't just pay outright cash to Greinke. They gave us a lot for Greinke. You know, Gene Segura, Ariel Pena, and Johnny Helwig. Greinke is not, by any means of the stretch of the imagination, a cheap pitcher. His salary this year is $13.5 million. But, you know, with the quality he can give you, I mean, you look at his start since August 24th, from playing Detroit twice, Boston, Texas, Seattle. He's allowed 2 runs or less in each of those starts. And he's gone 7 innings or more, with the exception of last night where he only went 5. He's won every single one of those starts except for 2 of them. He's lowered his ERA from 5.22 to 3.40 with the Angels, and that's a lot that's going right for them. But overall, that team is probably going to miss the playoffs, despite their strong start and their strong run against Texas.
Right.
Unless Baltimore, Oakland falls in the American League wild card, I really don't see the Angels getting in there, because a lot of people thought, well, they'll probably get in through the West, and I said, well, no, you know, Texas has that locked up, and then Oakland, you know, really came out of nowhere and has really, you know, stayed in that spot. They're really gunning to get into the playoffs, and the Angels, if they do, they're going to need strong starts out of Greinke, which they have been getting, strong starts out of Wilson, strong starts out of Weaver, strong starts out of Irvin Santana. But I think in the long run, they're going to offer something to Greinke. It depends on what it is. But like you said, it's if he wants to stay to a team that he's more comfortable with, like Milwaukee, maybe. I certainly don't think it's out of the question for him to come back to Milwaukee, but let's be realistic about it. I don't know if it's actually going to happen. But it's one of those 50-50 things.
Right. I think it would be great if he could come back to Milwaukee. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that.
I think great's a little bit of an understatement.
Yeah. But I think... like you said before, the Angels gave up a lot. They gave up a big future for Zach Greinke. You don't do that for a one-year shot at the postseason.
No. You're thinking long-term.
I mean, and if you do, you are the most short-sighted organization that I've ever heard of. Although we did... I mean, we gave up a little bit to get CC Sabathia, but we also had the depth to overcome it, and you know, I'm not sure if the Angels are in that same position.
That and the fact that the Angels are in a division to where they're expected to do well, and with Texas always being up there, with Oakland now being resurging, with even Seattle only being 10 games under 500, that's a lot better than they have been in previous years. That's a young team that's making a push. You know, we saw this last year about, you know, Washington. They were still under 500, or still lower in the lower part of the division.
Right.
But with Seattle really turning it around, and with Houston coming into that division next year, Seattle can pose a threat. So I really think that the Angels, when they did this, they were thinking they were going to have Greinke long term. Because you just don't give up the farm for one guy, for, like you said, for just half a season to maybe get into the playoffs. Because even if they get to that second wild card spot, they're still not assured in the playoffs. They still have to play either Baltimore or Oakland for one game. Then they might be in the playoffs. So there's that. That and the fact that, you know, pitchers do heavily impact games, but they only pitch every one in 5 days. So, yeah, Greinke can be doing well, but if the rest of the rotation sucks, then you're screwed. So, I don't know. It's really up to Greinke then where he wants to go. I would love to have him back in Milwaukee, but I don't know if it'll happen. Freeing up Markham's salary might, you know, you at least have to entertain the thought of offering him something. I think if you're Doug Mulpin, you have to at least entertain that thought a little bit. But, I think the Angels are trying to keep a little bit of a hold on him. They have to at this point, or else they will literally look like a joke team, because they just depleted everything just for one guy who's not even going to stay with them.
Right. They absolutely have to try to get him again. And I don't think it's out of the question for them to do that.
Do you think it's out of the question for Doug Mulvin to try and offer him something?
Oh, I think the way Greinke talked after the season, or around the time he was traded, I think it's obvious there's a connection between Greinke and Milwaukee, that he really, really enjoyed his time here. I think Melvin, for all the flack that Doug Mulvin gets, I think Doug Mulvin has been remarkably farsighted in a lot of his moves. And I think he knows what the score is with Greinke. I mean, he sees his own books. He knows kind of what's going on. He's going to give him an offer. He's going to give him an offer that's going to be not the most competitive offer in the league, but he's going to give him something that's going to be incentive-laden, that's going to be right around the offer we gave him before he was traded, and maybe a little bit more depending on how the books figure out. But I don't think it'll be enough to compete with everyone else that's going to want Greinke.
Or maybe Doug Mulvin will hit full Godfather mode and be like, I'm going to give you an offer you can't refuse. I don't think threatening him is going to really bring him back. But, yeah, it really depends what he wants to do in the long run, because I think even with Milwaukee, you have a team that's turning it around, and I think even next year, with or without him, will be playoff, you know, playoff-wise, I think they have a huge shot. Because if Milwaukee plays like they are now and next year, all season, they'll win the division easily. I mean, you take some of the losses that they did have, maybe even 10 games, and they're maybe, what, I don't know, 4 games behind Cincinnati for the lead in the Central.
Right.
You take a lot of the things Milwaukee did wrong and make them into rights, they're easily a playoff contender almost every year. You know, that is some bias there, but I like what I see out of this team, And I think getting Greinke back strengthens this rotation a lot more because you have Gallardo, you have Greinke, you have Estrada, Fires, and then you have whoever you want to use, Peralta, Thornburg, Narvison. I think with that, that really adds a lot to this because then you can put whoever you don't use in the bullpen. I think even in next year, you keep Brandon Kinsler up here. I think he's done a fantastic job in the bullpen.
Yeah.
Maybe even spot start him if you have to. I've really liked what I've seen out of him. I think it was a shame that he was injured for a lot of the season. And I'm at AAA. But, you know, I've liked what I've seen out of him. I always thought Josh Stinston was a very interesting case because he's never really pitched, like, much at all. At least into this season, he's only had 4 2/3 innings pitched at all in September. Give up 4 hits, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. I don't know going down the road if he's long-term relief or not, but I don't know. What do you think? What do you think of Josh Stinston?
I'm sorry. I kind of lost you there. Can you repeat that, please?
Oh, Josh Stinson, what do you think about him?
You know, he's one of the guys, I think, like you said, it could be... It can be he can do a lot of things well. It's just a matter of... he can do that over the long term. You know, like you said, we haven't seen a whole lot out of him. I like a lot of what I've seen. He hasn't overwhelmed me, but
you still there?
Yeah, kinda.
Alright, sorry about that, folks.
There we go.
Alright, so you're saying about Stinson, he hasn't really overwhelmed a lot of people, but I think in the long run, you know, there might be some potential value for him, because we talk about all these guys we can put in the bullpen next year, but we realize there's a certain spot of guys you can put in the bullpen. Axford has his job next year, Cameron Lowe has his job next year, I think Jim Henderson has his job next year, Brandon Kinsler has his job next year. So it's really who's gone from the bullpen in my mind. Francisco Rodriguez is gone. Manny Parra is gone. Jose Varas is gone. Tim Dillard, I think, just needs to be out of Milwaukee in general. I don't want him in AAA. I don't want him in AA. I don't even want him in A. I want Tim Dillard gone. I think the bullpen has to start anew, and I think if the bullpen does bad next year, even starting anew, it shouldn't get as much crap as it is now, because these are guys who have pitched before here, and I think if you bring up, you know, the Josh Stinsons and the Brandon Kinslers and the Jim Hendersons in next year, you're getting guys who are trying to get used to this, and if they do well in the long run, then it's win-win, because you have guys who are ready to pitch, and then a bullpen that is looking better. This is all hypothetical, of course, but hey, why couldn't it work, you know?
Right. And we already, I mean, like you said, with Henderson, with Stinson, who I think would be fine, it would be a fine addition to the bullpen, at least going into spring training. With him, with Henderson, with Axford, I mean, maybe we haven't seen anything from the two unrelated De Los Santos that we've acquired. You know, we haven't really seen anything out of them this season at all. You have the makings of a brand new bullpen that I think will do just fine. And the bullpen has turned it around remarkably in this last month, and they're still not going to get enough credit because, well, you know, they struggled so mightily over the entire season that it's hard to be okay with that. It's hard to just move on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Brewers are on the right track in terms of the bullpen, in terms of the offense, in terms of the starting pitching. And if you're a real true Brewers fan, going into 2013, you can't not be excited.
I know, because there's just so much potential this team has that it's just incredible. There's a lot that's going right with the Brewers right now. There's a lot that they know is flowing right. They finally figured out the shortstop problem with Gene Segura. They finally figured out what works in the bullpen and what doesn't. And other than that, the team works. The offense works. The starting pitching works. And those are two crucial factors when you head into a new season. We'll see how it plays out in spring training. But I think going into next season, there's not a whole lot to be worried about with this team at all.
Right.
So, the one thing I did want to talk about, completely unrelated to the Brewers, is about a little bit in the AL wild card, and even, I guess, AL Central a little bit, is the Detroit Tigers. Surprisingly enough, the person who's leading strikeouts in the American League is not Justin Verlander, but Max Scherzer, his teammate.
Right.
Detroit has really made a push. As of last week, they were, what, I think, 5 games out of first in the Central, and now they're tied with the Chicago White Sox.
Right.
Is it more or less Chicago falling off, or Detroit just making this absolute monster push?
I think it's Detroit, really, because Chicago hasn't been playing. I mean, they're 4-6 over the last 10, but they haven't been playing terribly. Although you can probably make a case that any loss to Cleveland is terrible.
Yeah,
but Chicago has been trying to keep Chicago's been trying to keep their head above water, and doing fairly well. Not to say that 82-72 is treading water by any means, but in terms of locking up that division. But there's just so much fight in Detroit. And I mean, the team has talent everywhere. It's hard to say, you know, it's hard to say what's really the case there. Sometimes, you know, two teams just want it that badly. And heading down into the end of the season, if you're a fan of the AL, you can't be more excited than the way this season is shaking out right now. Because remember, whoever loses that divisional race is completely out of the playoffs.
Yeah, because they're not getting in at all through the AL wild card with Baltimore and Oakland.
Right. Yeah, the Angels are 2 back, which playing against, you know, with Oakland, the way Oakland's been playing, it is almost as impossible as where the Brewers are at. Tampa Bay is a game behind Los Angeles. And then you have Chicago and Detroit behind them, tied at 5 games back for the second wild card spot, while they are both in the lead of their division. It's incredible the high level of competition out of the AL this year.
Mm-hmm. The one person I want to talk about in general, though, is Miguel Cabrera, and how, you know, when the season's said and done in a week, he could possibly be a Triple Crown winner. Leads in batting average, I believe in the AL, right over Joe Mauer. Leads in RBIs, is a home run shy of 43, which would tie Josh Hamilton. But I think it's almost a shame that if the Detroit Tigers won't win it, that he isn't the MVP. Because we always talk about, well, you have to, you know, win a division, be in the playoffs to be an MVP, which I really honestly don't believe. I don't know why. I just never bought into that.
I don't
think you need to be in the playoffs for you to be an MVP or a Cy Young. Because you look at 2008, 2009, when Tim Lincecum won the Cy Young Award in the NL, Giants weren't even near contention. You look at last season with the Dodgers and Matt Kemp, you know, being second, you know, with Ryan Braun for NL MVP. Dodgers weren't in it. So I think what gross was happening with Detroit, I think Miguel Cabrera has to win MVP. If not, I'm not saying Mike Trout doesn't deserve it. I think he's definitely done a fantastic job as a rookie. But the numbers Miguel Cabrera puts up year in, year out, these really good high numbers, I just don't know how you don't give it to him.
Right. And I think on the discussion of playoff teams and the MVP race, I think if the numbers are close, the player on the team in the playoffs should get it. And I mean, that's if the numbers are, the performance is like neck and neck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I mean, which would explain why Braun won it last year over Kemp. I mean, there were arguments on both sides that were both extremely valid.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, but it's just, if the Angels were to make it, which I don't see happening, and Detroit weren't to make it, and you give it to Mike Trout instead of Miguel Cabrera, though, Mike Trout is below him in average, below him in home runs, below him in RBI, basically below him in everything else. And you give it to him? I don't understand that. I just really don't. And people were saying, well, you know, Jeter's in the race.
No. I'm saying... Mike Trout in the AL is a lot like Bryce Harper in the NL right now. Mike Trout is way better than Bryce Harper. We're going to put it that way. Mike Trout has the hype machine behind him as well, and that's a big part of the voting. Is who's being talked about more? And I guarantee you, there are more mentions every hour of Mike Trout than there are of Cabrera. But I think Cabrera has to get it. You see, you know, we haven't had anyone this legitimately close to a Triple Crown in years.
Since Carl Yastrzemski.
And I don't think there's any question of his value to the Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing I think a lot of people skip over, is how important it is to their team. Because, you know, we talked about, and you even wrote that article on Stop Campaigning for Ryan Braun for MVP. You look at how much a player means to their team, how much Ryan Braun means to Milwaukee, this is how much, you know, Prince Fielder might, and Miguel Cabrera might mean to Detroit. Miguel Cabrera more so, because he's been there longer in the long run. You know, Prince Fielder's been a really nice addition for Detroit, but I think Miguel Cabrera in the long run has meant the most to that team next to Justin Verlander. So there's a lot with that. So, I mean, is Mike Trout an MVP candidate? Yeah, I think he is. Does he win it? No, I think he definitely wins Rookie of the Year. There's no question in my mind. There's nobody in the AL that even comes close to him. But I just don't see him even really being near first at all. I think that's I think Triple Crown or not, I think Miguel Cabrera gets that.
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
I don't think there's any question there. I think the NL is more up in arms.
Yeah.
But I think Cabrera has to be the be-all, end-all of MVP votes this year.
Yeah, I think next week we'll probably delve into more of that kind of stuff. Because, I mean, last show next week,
yeah,
unfortunately, of the season. Unless the Brewers make the playoffs.
Right.
All right, last segment we want to get into today is our weekly segment of Pitcher and Hitter of the Week. I'll start it off for me. My Hitter of the Week is Gene Segura. Just absolutely amazing at the plate. Last 10 games he's played, 9 of them he's had a hit in.
Right.
He's had a triple, he's had a double, 2 triples actually. 4 RBIs, 4 walks. Hasn't really struck out all that much, has 2 stolen bases, has an average of .286, and he's just really done well in this past week.
My hitter of the week, Ramos Ramirez, and I'm going to tell you why. 7 games, 5 doubles and 2 home runs. Now, about a week ago, we had said that there was almost no way Aramis Ramirez gets the single season double record. The amount of times he would have to go for extra bases was extremely uncommon for players to do. And yet, there he is doing it, and he's only 3 away from tying Lyle Overbay's double record set in 2004.
Yeah. I think that's really impressive for Aramis Ramirez because, like, you also read another article about, you know, is this Aramis Ramirez's best season in his career? And I kind of have to agree with you on there because I've never seen this kind of production out of him when he was with Chicago for all those years. It's just he comes to Milwaukee and he's like the second coming of Prince Fielder, essentially.
Right, right. And, you know, you kind of have to... He's not as productive this year as... Well, he is. His production is very, very close to what Ryan Braun is doing right now. And you have to wonder, I mean, if there's a vote just by team, you just do a team vote, you know, MVP for the Brewers, for the Cubs, for the Reds, for, you know, everyone going down. Ramirez has a very strong argument.
Yeah, I think he does. I really think he does. He's provided a lot to this team. He's really backed up Ryan Braun really well in the lineup. He's had, you know, multiple really good defensive plays at third. He's just really good for his age at, you know, 34, I believe he is. So that's been really impressive out of him. Colin, yeah. Who is your pitcher of the week?
My pitcher of the week. You know, it's tough because there wasn't like amazing, amazing performances except for maybe John Axford. Four for his last four now. I think he's got, what, 14 straight saves?
I believe so.
And he's up over 30 for the season?
Yes.
I mean, you think about the turnaround that he's had, that all of a sudden, you know, he is the closer again. There's no question now. For a while, it was like, well, he's the closer for now. And a little bit before that, it was, he should be run out of the league on a rail, and if we even see him playing double-A ball again, we're going to tar and feather him.
I actually saw, just to add to that real quick about Axford, when he was really bad, I saw one of those things online. It was like, I put a John Axford poster on my door, now it won't close. I saw something like that, thinking, oh man, that's really bad.
Right, and all of a sudden, I mean, he's back, and he's doing incredible. One earned run that came off of a home run, I believe, from, I believe that was Andrew McCutchen.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I can't really hold it against you. You know? But then, five strikeouts and only one walk in 3 1/3 inning. He's my guy. Until further notice. Because he is just lights out.
You know, by default, I think Axford gets it for me, but I think if I have to choose somebody that isn't Axford, kind of like the whole thing where it could be Ryan Braun every week, but we're not choosing him because there's other players on this team. It has to be Brandon Kinstler for me.
Okay.
Because looking at up through last Thursday on the 20th, he went two innings against the Pirates, gave up one run on two hits.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, two innings pitch, that's pretty efficient for a bullpen guy. And then since then, he's pitched 1 2/3 of relief against Washington and Cincinnati combined. One hit, no earned runs, two walks, two strikeouts. And even kind of before then, he just was absolutely lights out. He pitched five innings, three hits, no earned runs, a couple strikeouts, no walks, with maybe two walks here and there. But, you know, he's been really impressive for this bullpen because he's been able to go that, you know, 1 2/3, maybe two innings pitched in relief, and he's been able to hold the Brewers in the game sometimes. And even the two innings that he pitched against Pittsburgh last Thursday, when he gave up the one run, the Brewers still ended up winning that game. He's lowered his ERA significantly from when it started off at 7.71 down to 2.45. 3-0. I know really wins don't really matter for relievers, but I've liked what I've seen out of him. And I think he's definitely earned a spot in maybe next year, depending on how he does in spring training.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Brandon Kinstler has been fantastic since he came up. Only 3 earned runs in his last 10 outings, which, I mean, coming up against some of the teams that we were playing against, Seattle, Atlanta, Pittsburgh, Washington, the teams that he played against, it's impressive. It is definitely impressive. It's really good to see someone like him come into this bullpen and really make a difference and help turn this bullpen around.
Yeah, because you kind of see this new life, I guess, with the Brewers and their bullpen because, you know, if it's guys like Henderson, guys like Kinstler, maybe guys like Stinson, that will give this Brewers bullpen more new life and give them the chance to actually close out games with fear, you know, put that intimidation, like, oh, man, they're breaking out their, you know, starter, they're putting in the relief guys, we're done. You know, if we can put that fear into some people, like Atlanta had last year with their bullpen, you know, it was O'Flaherty, then there's Kimbrel. And, you know, game was done after that. Once O'Flaherty came in, you knew the game was done. If we can instill that kind of fear in teams next year, this Brewers team will be lights out for the season. They will be amazing.
Absolutely.
So, well, guys, next week is our last show of the regular season if the Brewers not make the playoffs. Hopefully they do. Colin and I are not losing hope at all until the last day of the season. I'm not saying we're losing hope then, but I'm just saying, you know, we won't know until then whether or not the Brewers are in the playoffs. Hopefully they do get in there. It'd be nice. If not, hopefully they at least finish above 500. So, thank you again for listening.
Thanks a lot, guys.